Welcome to the Fear Me Out podcast. Today I have the great pleasure of introducing Mary Ofer. I actually discovered her on Entrepreneur Magazine. I was reading some articles, and I guess she was interviewed about her company. It's called 9/11 Restoration. She's the CEO. And the company actually does water damage and repair. But the part of the article that I thought was amazing was that Mary decided that the company would do best by not just addressing people's loss of property and business, but also to help them understand that they're not alone and to feel some compassion about their losses from an emotional perspective. I thought that was amazing. I don't think a lot of businesses pay attention to their clients or employees' emotional needs. And so I thought, I got to get a hold of this woman and see if she'll come on the podcast and talk about her philosophy and who she is and how she got where she is. So Mary, I just want to welcome you and tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the podcast. There are two basic motivating forces, fear and love. When we're afraid, we pull back from life. When we're in love, we open up to all that life has to offer with passion, excitement, and acceptance.
Coming to you from our studio in Santa Barbara, California, this is the Fear Me Out podcast. We're not your typical self-help program. Our show takes a deep dive into those psychological issues that affect us on a daily basis. We hope to shift your perspective and have you experiencing emotions differently. Now, Dr. Dana Saperstein.
Well, thank you so much. I'm honored and the pleasure is all mine. Thank you for inviting me.
So, Mary, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, what your life is like, and then we'll get into the to your business and move forward from there.
Sure, absolutely.
So tell us about you.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Israel. I served in the IDF for 2 years, and then I came here to the U.S. in 2003. I got married in Israel, came here. My husband, today ex-husband, his dream was to come to America where money grows on the trees. And I came with him. I got married, and he was my new family. And we came here to the U.S. Fast forward a few years, I got divorced and found myself here in the U.S. with 2 children, 2 years old and 4 years old. And I met the founder of 9/11 Restoration. Believe it or not, I was a very shy person. Met him at a barbecue. He saw me. I was kind of sitting in the corner. He asked me if I need a job, and I said yes. And that's how we started. So I started, yeah. And for me, yeah, go ahead.
I was just wondering, how long ago was this?
That was 2003.
Oh, so that's almost 20 years ago.
Almost 20 years ago.
21. Yeah. Wow. That time's going by fast. That's remarkable.
It's been a while.
So, yeah. So he offered you a job in the company. What did you start off by doing?
Just secretary, pretty much. So back then, it wasn't even a franchise. It was just, just a business, local business that did restoration and handyman and everything you can possibly think of that falls under the home industry. And I pretty much did everything they needed. Answering phone calls, going to jobs when I needed, do the marketing for them, payroll, pretty much A to Z, everything to manage a business
and
back then.
Did you know anything about the water restoration industry?
Nothing.
I love the story. It's fantastic. So you got an education along with a job.
Yes, absolutely. I would say God works in a mysterious way. Like if you would ask me that's going to be my career. I would say no way. It was never a gold mine. I wasn't aware of this industry. In Israel, this profession doesn't even exist.
Really?
It was all new to me.
Yeah. Well, so before we move ahead, what was it like growing up in Israel for you?
It's different, obviously, from the U.S. I enjoyed it a lot. I think growing up in Israel made me the person that I am today, especially, you know, serving in the IDF, right? Independent, goal-oriented, team player, you know, comes with advantages and disadvantages, right? Growing up in Israel, you kind of learn to or adjust to grow up with a lot of stress that right. is in the background. So it's weird after so many years being in the U.S. for over 20 years, when I go to Israel, the second, so it's kind of learned how to live with it, right? Like when I was a child, there have been some wars, you know, when I was a child, when I was in school, I think maybe second grade or third grade, but it's part of living, right? But I think that made me a lot of who I am today. And maybe the stronger, so I'm grateful for all the experience that I've been through.
I actually almost lived in Israel in 1959. My family went there with the idea that we might settle. But unfortunately, my dad was not able to learn Hebrew very easily. So we didn't stay. But I was there for about 4 months, way, way, way before you were born. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it was, I found it to be quite fascinating. And it was an amazing experience. I have so many clear memories, even though I was about four and a half years old at the time. Other people I've talked to that have grown up in Israel really...
Yeah, well, it's way different than...
Yeah. The people I know that grew up in Israel always talk about having the sort of feeling in the background of maybe heightened danger compared to most other places you could live. Was that part of your experience as a child?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you grow up with a lot of stress that something is going to happen, right? I've been through, you know, a war when I was as a child with Iraq back then, and then you have missiles and you have all the alarms, right? And you get, you know, there's no school. And also even, you know, just walking in the street, it's not as safe, right? You always have to look around you, right and left and back and forward, just to make sure that you're safe. And that was, you know, part of how I lived. I'd say it's way different here in the U.S.
And you went into the military. That was required, is that correct?
Yes, was required to do that. In Israel, when you turn 18, you have to serve the military.
Oh, okay. And you were a military police woman, is that?
Police officer,
wow.
Yes.
What was that like for you?
It was an amazing experience. I would do it all over again if they call me today.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have that sense of giving, you know, to the country. You know, it's my home at the end of the day. So it was amazing. I mean, I learned a lot of things that helped me to form who I am today. Helped me a lot, you know, to be the person that I am as a mother and as a businesswoman and as a person. Again, yeah, wouldn't change that for anything.
And do you still have family there?
So all my family are back in Israel. I'm the youngest out of four, and I came here. So they're all there, and I'm here by myself.
And how, again, I know this is a bit off the reason why I'm interviewing you, but how are they managing these days?
It's difficult, very stressful. It's not easy at all, because by today, there's someone that you know that got hurt or died or something happened.
Right.
It's sad, it's hard. Even for me, even though I'm here, my heart is there.
Right.
So it's hard, you know, in the last few months, it's hard to be 100% myself and devote myself to work. It's like I had that feeling that I need to be there, you know, and speaking with my parents, and I haven't seen them for a long time. You know, the stress doesn't do any good, you know, and, you know, suddenly they don't feel good. And it's unfortunate, but it's a way of living. It's that, you know, for them, it's their routine. It's challenging being here and all that.
Have you been back to Israel since you left all those years ago?
Yeah, I have been. I try to go every year.
Oh,
unfortunately,
okay.
In the last 2 years, I haven't been there. So hopefully this summer,
you'll go back and visit. I think it's pretty amazing that you got hired at a barbecue. I know I'm switching back to the that there has to be some fate involved in in that experience, I would imagine.
For sure.
So you've been with this company for over 20 years, and it wasn't even a franchise at that time.
That is correct.
So how is it that you started off, you know, just being like, it sounds like you actually ran the company in the beginning. How did you end up then, over the course of time, becoming the CEO?
The beginning. For me, 911 restoration was the one thing that is stable in life. I went through my own trauma, going through a divorce, being here in the U.S. I was, back then I was 28 years old. Here with two babies, 2 years old and 4 years old. Wow. And, you know, it wasn't easy. Like everything, however I looked at it, it was negative. Like, you know, everyone told me you should go back to Israel. There's no way that you can make it out here. I didn't make any money. Like back then I made maybe $12 an hour. Just the kids' daycare was about $1,400 a month. Wow. Financially, in all aspects, it was like you won't be able to make it. But I stayed. It's like, you know, what I told you earlier, it's God works in mysterious ways. And back then I didn't know how to call it, like faith or whatever. But there's something in me that says that, you know, I need to stay myself, which wasn't easy.
Yeah.
And so the company gave me so much throughout the years. And today I have the sense of, you know, giving back. From everything that I got. And so I pretty much started to do everything that back then the founder needed. His name is Idan, and we worked very closely, and he believed in me, and I really, really appreciated that. For me, that was priceless. So everything he needed, I did. Fast forward, I found myself in a company needed to form a digital marketing, division. So I educated myself and developed partnership with Google. That was back in 2007. And, started collaborating with franchisees. And as you can probably imagine, when you manage someone's marketing, sometimes it's their last dollars and sometimes it's retirement.
Right.
And when things are not going good and they don't see the return investment, from that sense of accountability, I started kind of digging in, you know, how did they answer the call? Did they sell the jobs? What is their revenue? What's the return on investment? And that was really my opportunity to have an in-depth understanding on the franchisee's world. So from there, I started working with different departments that relates to the franchisee's needs, like customer service or franchise consultant. And so I kind of, my roles changed throughout the years, right? From marketing manager to the CMO of the company, and then franchise consultant, and then the COO of the company. And today, very honored to be the CEO of the company.
So Miri, how did the company turn from one location? And by the way, where are you in the United States right now?
Los Angeles, California.
Oh, you're in Los Angeles. Is that where the headquarters is?
Yes, it's in Venice, California.
Oh, okay. I actually went to high school there, of all places. How funny. I wasn't sure which part of the country that you were in. So you very slowly worked yourself up to become the CEO of the company, which I think is amazing. How many different franchise locations are there?
So I'll just say first, it was never my goal to be the CEO.
No?
It's never my goal to be the CEO, but here I am today. I spoke with someone a few weeks ago, and he was like, you're a problem solver. And that's pretty much how I perceive myself. There is a challenge here, I stepped up. There's a challenge here, I stepped up. I also saw that as an opportunity for me to grow and develop, and I love challenges. And then how many branches we have today? We have over 300 units.
Is that all around the United States?
It's in the United States and Canada as well.
Oh,
most
Canada
of them are
too.
In the United States.
Yeah. Wow. Boy, that's a lot. That's a lot of different locations.
It is a lot of different locations. Yes, it's amazing. Very grateful to be part of this growth.
Well, and there's no shortage of need. I'm certain of that.
Yes. Unfortunately, things always happened, and we're in an industry that there's always a need for our services.
Well, I live in Santa Barbara, and a number of years ago, we had a gigantic fire and flood that was really devastating. I'm imagining that your company was involved in some of the restoration here and even in my community. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So when did you present the idea that your business was not just about restoration, but also that it was important to meet people's psychological needs?
So I think it was always a thing between me and Idan, the founder, where we were kind of evaluating, you know, our mission and why we do what we do. We formed we call it like the Fresh Start culture, which you can see that, you know, all over our website, which is all about being human and listening to people and be kind and kind of be open and see the other side. So it was always out there, and we're kind of trying together to figure out how we're going to implement that. So I think kind of throughout the years, as we learned more and we collaborated with more people, whether if it's franchisees or HQ employees or listening to customers who are calling to us, right, then it became more clear to both of us that this is it. Like, this is the real damage, right? That's where we were doubting, okay, in the physical world, right, what we're here, yes, there's the water damage and their house is wet, but emotionally, right, there's a huge damage, there's trauma. And throughout the years, we've seen it more and more. And as I transitioned to be the CEO, that was one of the biggest things that I decided to emphasize on. And again, it comes a lot from my own trauma. When I started, when I worked with 911 and I was here in the U.S., I kind of lost my family and was here all alone, and I had two children that I had to take care of, and we had days that I didn't know how I'm even going to feed them, or have pay rent for the home that we'll live in. And so the company gave me so much, and for me, I believe in God, so I want to give back, right? So it comes with that sense of accountability and wanting to give back to other people.
That's really an amazing story, actually. You know, it's hard for me to imagine being from a different country and coming here believing that you were going to start a life and, you know, things were going well. Again, you don't have to talk about the details of what happened to your marriage, but it sounds like it was very, very unexpected and really very frightening. Is that fair to say?
100%, yes.
And your kids are now, how old are your kids now?
17 and 19.
Wow. And do they work at all with your company?
So my daughter used to work with me for a while, but then she decided that she goes to college, so she came as an intern.
Oh, okay.
And now she focuses on her college, maybe in the future.
That's very sweet. So did you have any resistance from franchise owners to your philosophy of wanting to address people's psychological needs?
No, not at all. I think they're all open to it. And I think it really comes from leading by example, right? Like to treat them in that manner, right? And listen to them and show empathy to them. And from there, it's kind of like a snowball, like it grows and grows and develops. So not at all. They're very open to it, very receptive to it, and very grateful to collaborate with all of them.
It's so good to hear, because I would imagine, I don't know who are the people that, generally speaking, you know, would become franchisees, but older people my age, if you have any people that are sort of, you know, old school, might be a little bit resistant, thinking that, you know, they're they're not there to help the psychological needs of people. They just want to get the job done, that sort of thing.
I mean, you have some of them, yes. So in this case, it most likely would require more meetings and more conversations and more one-on-one. But I don't remember a scenario that, you know, at the end we didn't agree on it, right? So maybe with some it was more challenging to kind of explain the concept. Right. And so they would be receptive to it. But at the end, you know, they're all on board.
Did people
doing their best to implement it?
Did your franchisees give you feedback that when they started becoming more compassionate and sort of open to the psychological needs of people, that the business expanded as a result?
Yes, but, you know, I see that for myself, right? You see the reviews that we're getting online. You know, sometimes we would listen to calls that we're getting for people. Referrals are increasing based on the great service that, you know, that customers have received. So absolutely.
And do you mind my asking you where your psychological sophistication came from? Was it just your own experience, or did it's a delicate question to ask. I'm a psychologist, so.
Go ahead. It's fine. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, please.
I think it really comes from... I said it earlier, it's like that inner voice that tells you to go into a certain way, right? For a long time, I didn't even know what I'm doing. I was just being me and just doing things and operating in a certain way. And then I started receiving feedback from the environment and the people that are close to me. And I kind of saw the impact, right? I saw my impact on them. And I said, okay, what am I doing, you know? Started from, again, my own trauma and life experience. And from there, it's, you know, while collaborating with different people and kind of seeing the impact. And then I said, okay, there's something in here that I should think about more and see how I develop that more. And it's that's become my mission.
So you're bringing up something I think is really important, which is a person's connection to their intuition, which is what that's what you're describing, is that you learn to really connect and feel a deep connection to yourself, and that you may not have had the experience, but you certainly have the experience of listening to what your insides are telling you. Am I making a fair statement about what sort of drives you in your life?
Absolutely. As I shared earlier in the conversation, when I stayed here, you know, add to that, you know, all of my siblings and close family telling me that I should go back to Israel, and then I'm crazy that I'm even trying to stay here. And on top of it, you know, we have our own internal voice that tells you, you can't make it, you're not worthy,
right.
You're not good enough, you know. So all that stuff together, but still, there's something in me that I didn't know how to define it back then. There's some sort of like feeling that there's something here that I need to explore. And I just did it. And I think what got me through that is looking for signs, right? So like every day it was like a puzzle. There's small piece here that's resolved and another piece here. And I was kind of holding on to these signs. While my voice keeps telling me, you know, continue, move forward. And I think it's very important, especially these days, because it's much easier to criticize other people than looking internally at ourselves and seeing how we can be better human beings.
Right. You know, as a therapist, I am always encouraging people to learn how to connect with that inner voice and learn how to trust it. It's not as common as you might think that people trust it. You know, most people, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
But it sounds like for whatever reason, you really felt a strong connection at a very vulnerable time in your life.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if we want to lead, if we want to be perceived as leaders, we need to lead ourselves. And there are so many voices in the external world that tells us what to do, they critique us, they kind of sometimes puts us down. And really the secret is to shut it off and kind of listen to what we want, whatever you want to call it, and just pursue it, because no one knows better what's good for us other than ourselves.
Well, I think it takes an enormous amount of courage to come to a new country and then have your life kind of not be the way that you were imagining it to be, and having everybody tell you you should just go back to where you're from, and resisting that, that takes a lot of courage, in my opinion. A lot of courage.
Well, thank you. Yes, now, I mean, when I look at myself backwards, I was like, what was I thinking?
Right? Well, it sounds like it wasn't really what you were thinking, it's what you were feeling.
Exactly. So lucky enough, I wasn't listening, because, you know, the brain always works, and, you know, anxiety and concerns, especially when you have two babies that you have to take care of. But I was so connected to that feeling, and it felt so good that I was like, you know, I have faith in God. This is my path, and I'm going to do my best, and good things will happen.
So when you talk about having faith, I'm assuming that you are Jewish by religion and culture. Is that where your faith comes from, or are you not sort of? I mean, being a Jewish person myself, I don't practice the religion, but I'm very much connected to the culture, and so I'm always curious with people that I meet that are Jewish, whether they stay connected to the religious aspect of it, the cultural aspect of it, or both.
I don't think it's really the religious aspect of it, but it's more about, you know, like the culture. Like, I believe, you know, like in the Ten Commandments, it's all about how to treat each other.
Right.
Right? Like, you know, treat your friend like you want to be treated, and, you know, respect your parents, and, right? Like, so all these stuff. So that's what I really, the world would adopt that, we'll have a much better world to live in.
Well, and especially these days, it's so frightening to see how much anti-Semitism just is waiting to be, you know, waiting to explode. It seems like it's always there, and it's kind of, it depends on what the situations are. But right now, it's pretty frightening. And again, we're not necessarily talking about your business right now, but I'm curious about whether on a personal level you're feeling that kind of fear and tension because of how many people are taking issue with what's happening in Israel right now.
So I choose not to, so I'll say no, and every time, you know, I won't lie. Sometimes, you know, there's a thought that would cross my mind, but immediately I'm just going to let it go. You know, there's always concerns and things always happen, and, you know, especially now these days, but I choose to leave it to my mind, just regardless of anti-Semitism and everything that goes on in the world. So we have enough to deal with, and I just choose not to give that part on my life. Therefore, you know, for me, I don't want to live in fear. I don't want my children to live in fear. I have faith. You know, for me, you know, just do good, and good things will happen, and just take it from there. I don't think filling ourselves with negative thoughts and anxiety would benefit us in any way.
Well, that's true. It doesn't really make anything better, but it's hard not to worry sometimes. And what about your kids? Are they being affected in their schooling with what's happening right now?
There have been, like, incidents here and there, but, you know, fortunately minor. So not too much. But, you know, every time if something happens, you know, we talk about it. And
so you just do the, you just do the best you can, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So what am I forgetting to ask you about? I'm really curious about who you are, and what am I forgetting to ask you about?
What are you forget to ask me about?
What else is important to you?
What else is important for me? I guess, like, the bigger picture. Especially after COVID, it's I think, like, people lost trust in general in other people. Everyone were isolated, and everyone were in their own island. And I mean, look at the world, and you see, like, so many wars and disagreement or anti-Semitism, and it's been crazy. So the biggest thing for me, and I said it always, is how do I, what can I do to make the world a better place for my children and for everyone's children? Kind of hopefully inspire people to see the other person and, you know, without criticizing, with some, maybe start some sort of like a movement, you know, that people will be more open and open to see each other and listen to each other and show empathy to each other so we can all have better lives.
So do you do anything outside of your business that it goes along the lines with what you're talking about in terms of being of service?
Yeah, absolutely. So I volunteer, right? There are different things that I go and I volunteer. Of course, there is also foundation that we support as part of our franchise. We have a franchisee that founded a foundation, which is so that's something that we support as well, like the whole organization. And so I always look for opportunities, whether if it's within work or outside, to kind of increase our impact and impact people in a good way.
What is the foundation? So what, that foundation that you were just talking about, what does it do? What does it support?
So it supports teenagers pretty much to avoid teenagers that commit suicide, right? So unfortunately today, especially after COVID, we see numbers increasing significantly. And one of our franchisees founded this foundation, unfortunately, due to personal experience. And, you know, as soon as we heard that, we're all on board. You know, how can you not relate? I have two children of my own. It's not easy, especially these days. With all the craziness that's going on in the world.
Right.
And board on that mission. And it's something that we took upon us as a franchisor to see how we can help them and how the whole network, right, all the 110 franchisees that we have kind of take that as our own mission. And as he said, his name is Tony Lewis. And, you know, what he says is, how do we avoid having more families join their club, right? So that's our mission,
right?
To make sure as less as possible.
Which part of the country does this foundation, where is it, the center?
Missouri.
Oh, Missouri. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So if anybody that's listening to the podcast would like to kind of support your foundation, how might they do that?
So there is a website. It's called Charlie's Limelight of Hope. Donate. We're all going to appreciate it. And yeah, help us together make the world a better place.
Is it a nationwide organization or mostly centered in Missouri?
So it started as a local organization in Missouri, but our goal is to get that nationwide. It's an initiative that we started recently to collaborate with him. So right now we're strategizing how to, you know, leverage on that. In addition, we have our own foundation, which we call the Fresh Start Foundation. So this is a foundation that we own, the franchisor, and what we do, we donate on an annual basis from our revenue to different charities, whether if it's children or whether if it's holidays, whether if it's meals, you know, for families that don't have it. So it's the Fresh Start Foundation, and it's Charlie's Limelight of Hope is something that we do internally.
You know, I think it's really incredible what you're doing. It's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Again, for me, 9-on-1 restoration, as you said, like I never knew the restoration world. For me, I utilize that more of as a stage to kind of to fulfill my mission in this world, right? If I wouldn't be 9-on-1 restoration, I would never meet Tony or that foundation. And I wouldn't be able to be part of making an impact on that. So that's really how I see things, and I'm very, very grateful for it.
And it sounds like the founder of the company sees things in a similar way. Is that a fair statement to make?
Yes, absolutely. Idan and I see things eye to eye. We're partners since 2003, so for many years, which is also a relationship with someone that I didn't know. I met him here in the U.S. And that's another thing, like for me, it's faith. You call it was meant to be.
Sure.
So I'm very grateful for that, yeah.
And what's his name again?
Idan Speiser.
He's the person that started the very first, he started the company,
yeah. So he started the company in 2003, and, then he needed office manager, and then he met me.
And I'm sorry, but I just think it's so cool that you guys met, you know, in such an unusual way, and that he was smart enough to see in you somebody who would really do an amazing job, especially going through what you were going through. It must not have been an easy time in your life, obviously.
During that time period when everyone told me that I'm crazy and that I should go back to Israel, he was the only one that supported me. And for me, it's something that I'll cherish for the rest of my life. And for me, it's priceless. And I'll do everything, I still do everything that I can to maintain this relationship and do great things together.
And this was just at a random, a random barbecue in Los Angeles?
Yes.
Good for you. I love to hear stories like that because I'm just completing a series of my podcasts on miracles and having people describe things in their life that they might consider to be a miracle. And I may be overstating, I don't know if you look at it as being a miracle, but it sure seems like at that moment in your life, you really needed a miracle to happen to help you feel some kind of security and find your path. And it sure happened at the most amazing time.
Yeah, I do definitely perceive that as a miracle. And I thank God for that, you know, every night before I go to bed and every morning when I wake up. From struggling financially, to bring food to my kids today, to being the CEO of a nationwide franchise, it's a dream come true. Like if you had asked me, 20 years ago that that's what's going to happen, or, when I got my divorce, there's no way that this would be the outcome, right, yeah. That I thought. So definitely a miracle.
It sure sounds that way. I didn't know that I was going to be talking to somebody today who experienced such a profound a miracle, I guess. I mean, I look at these things as miraculous. Some people think they're just kind of coincidences, but I don't believe that. I think that especially in our greatest moments of need, sometimes really amazing things can happen.
Right, being present at every moment and do our best to listen to ourselves. And just, good things will happen. And I think I'm a living example of it.
Do you mind if I ask you, are you in a relationship now?
I am, yeah.
And has that been a long-term relationship for you?
Yes, for the last, 13 years.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so I got me. Yeah.
So you found, I'm hoping that it renewed your faith in love, I'm hoping.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm such a positive person. I'm a big believer that everything has a valid reason. So even with my hardest and more, the most challenging moments, I kind of always raise my eyes and, I have my conversation with God and I was like, I know there is a really good reason why this is happening to me right now. Maybe I don't know it now, but I would really appreciate if you'd and that really would help me.
So you knew it would be revealed to you at some point.
Yeah, I knew that everything happens for my benefit and it's going to work out. And I just need to give it my best and my all. And good things will happen. And fortunately, it did. And that's why I teach my children. Just follow your heart and do your best in any given moment. And don't listen to the outside world because everyone has a lot of things to say always.
And, isn't that the truth?
Yeah, stay true to yourself and good things will happen. And even when you make mistakes, these are the right mistakes for me.
Yeah.
And these are the right mistakes that I should have done in order to learn and be better and do better. And it comes with it.
Well, I, again, I'm not sure if you realize it, but you're bringing up something I think that's extremely important, which is that most people find their center outside themselves. And they're very, very, and we're taught every day, at least through social media, that our value is determined by how people see us from the outside. You know, all of the harmful, stupid stuff that happens as a result of all those platforms. Part of what I try to help people understand is that if you can move your center inside yourself, not to be self-centered, because that's horribly obnoxious, but to be centered in yourself, which is exactly what you are describing, is the most healthy, effective way of having the life that you want to live. How'd you figure this out, or is it just always been the way that you have lived?
I've had my moments, right? I had my breaking points.
Well, we all do,
but
you're very,
yeah, but I think
you're very centered in yourself.
Yeah, it's again, I mean, if you'd asked me 20 years ago, I didn't know what I was doing, but it was just, you know, there's that feeling that I was so connected to, and I just stayed connected to it. It just felt right. I couldn't even explain it in words. And I just went along with it. And I think throughout the years, what I've done, I was kind of holding on to the small things, and I refer to them as signs that I got from the universe, right?
Sure.
So even though right now everything looks horrible, but today something really great happened. And I would hold on to that. And I was like, and cherish it and really put the spotlight on it, we'll put it this way. And that helped me go day by day, right? So every day I would look for that sign from the universe of that good thing that happened in my life, that kind of maybe, I don't know, a challenge that I had, or maybe someone was kind to me. And I would say, okay, I'm in the right, and just keep moving on, you know, baby steps.
Amazing. It's rare that I meet somebody in the business world that's this psychologically sophisticated. And I mean, no offense to the business world, but, you know, generally speaking, people that do what you do are not the most psychologically sophisticated people in the world.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. So we still have a few minutes, or anything else that you want to talk to my audience about that you consider important in life? And I'm not just talking about in your business world, but in your personal philosophy, because you are actually quite a remarkable woman.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think it's just, I think the biggest thing for me, again, is to treat each other like you want to treat yourself, right? And I think when people do that, when they take a moment, right? If someone was mad at you, or if someone did something, before we get upset, before we yell, is truly take a moment and try to see the other person. I think that would be great. And the quality of life for all of us is going to be so much better. And we're all going to live in such a better way. And so if there's one thing, you know, in terms of like, that I want people to get out there, is to empathize really with each other, whether if it's spouse or children. And I think it's easier said than done, and can be challenging, but it's a way of living. And it's all about making that decision and to be aware before we respond. And then gradually, you know, when we implement that in life, we also feel more relaxed, and we're able to accomplish things, and we have better relationships. So that world, what a lot of companies are kind of lacking, and a lot of the C-executive level, they don't see the people.
Right.
And I think when people actually start to see the people, that's where they're going to see a huge change. For a lot of companies, people are P&L, people are numbers. You know, whether if it's people that work with them, or whether if it's their franchises or their customers, right? They need to change that perception of these are real people. And once they change that, I think that everything is going to look much better.
It's a really good philosophy. It's amazing. Have you ever considered doing seminars to help people wake up to the to all of the stuff you were talking about on a business level?
I thought about it. The thought it kind of came across my mind here and there on restoration. Then kind of put it as it's still on paper, I guess. Maybe in the future.
Well, I imagine that you're quite busy, so I can't imagine where you would have time to do this. But, you know, everything you're saying is so important for people to understand. I remember once a long time ago watching a television show, 60 Minutes, about a man who started a tech company back east. And it was during the time that the tech bubble collapsed. And his company stayed really successful during all of the downturn, and so they wanted to find out from him what, you know, what his secret was, and he decided that despite how the company was doing, he was going to continue to take care of the people that worked for him in a really remarkable way. His company was pretty big, so he had a restaurant there. He actually had a doctor, a dentist, a car mechanic, everything that you would possibly need on the campus of his business. And so when he hired somebody, in order for them to, you know, do their best, he wanted people not to have to worry about taking care of pretty much everything. So, you know, he had childcare for everybody, dental care, medical care. It was actually it's like having his own private city he said that he had an average of about 400 people a month applying for jobs there because, they found out that he took such good care of the people that worked for him, and the company was so successful. And, you know, you would think with that kind of financial outlay that you would be spending way more money than you need to. But from his perspective, the better you treat your employees and the more you take care of their needs, the more loyal and good they're going to be to you, instead of having people be afraid all the time, which is the way most businesses run. Right, it's based on fear. You make a mistake, you're going to get fired. You make a mistake, somebody's going to yell at you. But his idea was take care of people, and they'll take care of you.
Yeah, exactly.
And it sounds like that's what
I couldn't agree more. For me, yeah, exactly. Couldn't agree more. I think for me, it's. I mean, besides, yes, it's what they need, but it's also, you know, it's get to know them on a personal level. What do they want? What is their, you know, dream career goal, right? What do they want to accomplish on a personal level? And what I always tell everyone, okay, now we share the same goal.
Right.
Right. So then it becomes my commitment to them to make sure that that happens. And you know, to believe in people is to help them develop and grow. Like for me, it means the world. And that's really the reason that I do what I do.
I think the guy that hired you, the head of the guy that started the company, he must, I can only imagine he's like, how did this happen? Where did I find this woman? He must be so grateful. And if he's not, you need to tell him that he should be. Give him a message from me.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Because
we know each other and we always talk about it.
Yeah, it's really good. It's just so nice for me to hear, you know, to find you in a magazine, number one, and to be really drawn to the article. And I just thought, I got to meet this woman. She's got something going on that most people really need to understand. So I'm really glad I found you, and I really appreciate you coming on my podcast. Before we finish, do you have any final words that you'd like to say?
Just really thank you so much for having me on this show. I mean, my hope is that if I was able to touch even one person and, you know, maybe help one person, for me, it means the world. So I really hope I did. And if anyone needs restoration services, obviously.
Of course. I was going to ask you again how people can reach out to your company if they need the services that you guys provide, because man, if I was going to make a choice, yours would be the one. So how do people reach 9/11 Restoration?
Yeah, so they can go to our website, 911restoration.com. Just click there, call us, and we have a 24/7 call center in-house. People that are trained, who knows how to take the call, and, you know, hopefully no one needs us. But if they do, we're here for them 24/7.
And tell us exactly what your company specializes in so that people know.
Sure. So our company specializes in restoration services, including water damage, mold, fire, sanitization. And pretty much we do everything from the mitigation portion to rebuilding everything and get things better than they were.
So it's not just water restoration. I'm mistaken in that regard. It sounds like you do other kinds of restoration, like fire and other things like that. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. Water, fire, mold, smoke damage.
Oh, okay. I'm really sorry. When I read the article, they didn't say anything other than that you guys were a water restoration company. So I was misled. I'm glad I asked that question because, I mean, with all the fires and floods and everything that we have, I can't imagine that you'll ever be out of a job, that's for sure.
Yes, it's unfortunate. Again, our slogan is we hope you never need us, you know. But if someone does, you know, we're here.
Well, and taken care of. Of course, it would be great if nothing bad ever took place in our lives. But at least people have an option of finding somebody that's not going to just care about the material aspects of their life, but will care about, you know, how they're coping with the things that have taken place. So to me, as a psychologist, that matters a great deal. So again, I thank you so much for coming on my show and sharing some of yourself and the miracle that took place in your life, because it's pretty amazing, actually. I think it's great.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And if you ever decide you want to go into the seminar business, look me up if you know what I mean. Because I think you have other careers you'd be quite successful at, not just what you're doing now.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. Remember, if you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to the Fear Me Out podcast, please go to www.jccs.org and earmark your donation to this podcast. If you need more information about making a donation, you can contact Dr. Saperstein directly at 805-452-0006. Thank you.